hubbub, a chaotic din caused by a crowd of people.
Hello again and welcome back to Hubbub for the Directors Hub Founders Support Club and our podcast series with Season 4 and Episode 5. We're here today with Mike Murphy of Solar Dynamics, and we're going to be chatting to him today about the solar panel industry and how it's been established in the UK and how it's going. So welcome, Mike.
Hello.
Hello. Joining me today is my co-host, Faye Miller from Gingerbread World, and of course myself co-hosting Sunny Cutting from Network Express. So hello.
Hi.
Hi, Mike. How's it going?
Very good. You? Thanks for having me.
Nice to have you on the podcast. As Sunny said, we're going to talk about the solar panel industry, how it's grown in the UK, how it is growing, and how you got into it. So tell us a bit more about yourself and your business and how you got into solar panels.
So we've been going as Solar Dynamics now. This is our fourth year. We effectively took over a long-standing company that had been going since 2003. Yeah. And for all intents and purposes, we rebranded it, modernised it,
okay. And
we've kind of taken it to the next level, should yeah. we say. So I'm still fairly new to this, but the company itself's got quite a bit of longevity yeah. behind it.
So what did you do before taking over this company then?
So I still run and co-own a company called PBS Group.
Right.
And that's a managed print services company.
Okay.
We founded that in 2007. So this is our 18th year.
Wow.
So it was one of those opportunities that just kind of came around at the right time.
Okay.
We were looking at some possible other things to do within our industry, maybe yeah. some acquisitions for similar types of businesses that yeah. we could bolt on. And the opportunity for the solar company kind of just presented itself, and
okay.
it just came at exactly the right time where we could we had some time to spare on it and some money to invest in it.
Okay.
And so we jumped on it because we saw it's a fantastic industry to be in that's growing quite rapidly at the moment.
Yeah, I was touching upon that. I mean, how is the solar panel industry in the UK more and more people are taking it on board, and I've seen new builds with more and more solar panels installed. So it is a growing market then, and you're expecting significant growth as time marches on, I suppose.
Yeah, so I mean the industry has historically gone up and down in massive curves.
Mm.
I mean, because the technology has been around for quite a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, the first solar, I suppose the silicon cell, solar cell, mm. which is what the modern technology is based on, has been around since the 50s.
Yeah, gosh, that's
so,
a long time.
Yeah, it's been around a long mm. time. And there was thermal solar technology that was invented in like the late 1800s.
Wow.
So the technology has been around for quite yeah. some time. But what tends to happen, I think, is just with changing markets, and things like crises, like the yeah. oil crisis back in the, whenever it was, the 70s or whatever,
yeah.
there was a spike in solar take-up back then. Mm. There was a massive spike in solar take-up when the government decided to actually put some money and some subsidies
yeah.
Towards it in 2010, when you had the feed-in tariffs. And there was the there was another initiative which I've actually got written down here somewhere, the the renewal obligation certificate. Mm-hmm. So there was quite a lot of money being put mm-hmm. in it by the government, and the market went crazy. And what normally happens in those circumstances, the demand's high, the supply can't keep up, so things become very expensive. And then when things like governments start pulling money back from it, things start dropping back down yeah. at a rate of knots, and it's kind of done that for a long time. And we're in that, I suppose, that growth phase now where people are, they're not just doing it for the financials now. People are looking at the social responsibility and the environmental responsibilities yeah. and they're taking that into equation. We're dealing with a lot of businesses now that their focus is to have their company as carbon neutral yeah. as humanly possible.
Yeah.
So the savings then become a byproduct of their initiative to make their business mm. more green, Residential, slightly different. It's normally about the savings. Most of the time it's about, right, I've got X amount of money sitting in the bank, not earning me anything. Wonder what it would pay me back if I was to invest it in some kind of a renewable technology. So it's up and down.
So you do a bit of both then? You do commercial and residential, or is it predominantly commercial that you do?
So, yeah, when we took the business over, it was predominantly a domestic installation company. My business partner and I, we're used to dealing with commercial business. Our other company, we've got nearly 1,000 customers that are all businesses. So that's kind of where we've always felt comfortable. So it was a natural progression once we'd built the foundation of what we wanted to do with the with the solar company in its early days when we took it over, to then effectively build the routes to be able to take that into the commercial sector. So that's where we've got a really keen focus at the moment. We love doing the domestic stuff. It's great bread and butter business, but where we think we can give the most value is to businesses.
Because I mean, funnily enough, I wrote about solar panels for another company recently, as you do. So, and one of the things I wrote about was that there's been a slight relaxation in planning rules for solar panels, certainly for domestic properties. Is that right?
So, yes, that's
to facilitate it, isn't it?
Yeah, so planning's been very open-minded for a while now. There are still certain areas where you hit hiccups, like on things like flat roofs. If you're taking the solar panels over the ridge of the property, then you typically would need to get some form of planning. But unless you're in an area of outstanding natural beauty or a conservation area, or if there's some kind of a something written into the deeds of the contract that you can't of the property deeds that you can't make any alterations, then most, even in those sort of areas, like we're doing stuff for like churches and stuff, which are like grade two listed buildings, where the councils are open to it. They're I think they're being targeted as well, as far as making sure that businesses and homes are able to install renewables.
So I
think they're a lot more open-minded than what they used to be, even with things like ground mounts. Like normally anything over 9 square meters, if it's going on the ground, you have to have planning permission for. There are certain products that we can use which aren't fixed into the ground, they're ballast based, and it's kind of a little swerve ball to bypass planning up to a certain amount.
Do buildings have to be facing a certain way to have solar panels put on their roofs, or is that kind of a...
So, yeah, you ideally want it as close to south-facing as possible to get the optimal out of a solar panel. The solar panel technology has changed somewhat, where the old technology, you really needed direct sunlight, where the technology is a lot more sensitive now. So even in cloudy hazy days, or even without direct sunlight, you are going to get some production out of them. You're not going to get maximum. We wouldn't really put panels on a north-facing roof necessarily, although you will get some collection. Sometimes that can work if you're doing an array where you just, to fill up the string, you stick a couple of panels on the back. But typically, you ideally want it as south-facing as possible, with as few shading issues, like trees and other buildings and stuff. So we have a clever bit of software that's a lot smarter than me that calculates all of that.
I did wonder how you did that, because like I said, when I was writing about it, I was reading about positioning, and then the thing about that you didn't necessarily need sunlight, it was light, so that they will still function in the winter, albeit not as well.
Yeah, well, in the winter, I mean, you get a nice sunny winter's day, there's no reason why that system won't perform at absolute maximum capacity, because it's just photons hitting silicon cells at the end of the day, so... As long as there's photons hitting hitting the silicon, then it's going to be generating energy.
So in terms of the commercial side of things, are you experiencing quite an uptick in, as you say, companies wanting to hit carbon neutral targets and reduce their energy footprint? Because we all know energy prices have shot up in the last few years, and that's having an impact on businesses. And I know solar panels are an investment, but over time that pays them back, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, especially with commercial. I mean, a well-designed system, the return on investment is so good now, because we've kind of, in the last 3 or 4 years, we've kind of had one of those very quick sort of boom and bust as far as the market goes. And it was just purely a supply and demand thing.
Yeah.
Energy prices started going up. People are now like, oh my God, right, I've been thinking about solar for years, let's get it. And everyone had the same thought. So the demand went absolutely bonkers. There's not enough supply in the marketplace. So all the distributors, manufacturers are whacking their prices up because they're like, well, look, we can't be left with nothing. So prices went up and then things cooled off. And it's kind of come back down to what I think is a normal level now. For businesses, a well-designed system, you're seeing some return on investments on some of these systems that we're designing of like 3 years,
which is incredible because when I read about it, it was like 8 to 12 years on some of them in the past, so that's a huge difference, isn't it?
It's not on every you kind of need a bit of ideal scenarios to get that sort of return on investment. You want a beautiful beautiful south-facing roof with no tree shading and nothing like that. And it's, for us, it's about designing the right system for the right customer.
Yeah.
We don't get me wrong, we get customers where they want to future-proof and they'll be very much like, look, just fill every square inch of it. It's like, look, there's going to be a lot of wastage going back to the grid.
Yeah.
But they're kind of forward-thinking. They're thinking, right, at the moment we're running gas heating. We may well want to move over to an air source or electric form of heating or ground source. We may well be putting in banks of electric vehicle chargers. So they're kind of future-proofing to that. So when you do the stats on that based on current consumption, you're not going to get a 3-year return on investment. It's just not going to happen.
Unheard of.
But your typical commercial install, if it's a well-positioned property, is probably 5 to 6 year return on investment, which is pretty good.
It still sounds really good in terms of what I'd read before about how long it could take for these
domestic systems are a lot longer.
Right. But they can, they can sell back the. If they have excess energy they're not using, that can be returned to the national grid, is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I suppose the market mover there was probably Octopus.
Okay.
So they've kind of been at the forefront of the renewable side of things, and over the last 5-6 years or whatever, they've gained such a massive market share because they seem to be really focusing in on, right, let's look at our customers, let's look at people who have got electric vehicles. Let's put a product together so they can charge their electric vehicles really cheap at night.
Mm.
And putting in something like that, you're going to get business from the British Gas customers, the Shell customers, E.ON. And they started doing a similar thing with the solar. They started offering really, really competitive export rates, whereas only a few years ago, your average export rate going back to the grid was about 3 or 4 pence per kilowatt, which... when you looked at the average cost of energy buying in between 12 and 14 pence was a pretty fair percentage. But then when energy prices started going up to 25, 30, 35p a kilowatt, that 3p didn't cut it. So Octopus, I'm pretty sure they were the first ones to come out with a 15 pence per kilowatt for export.
Right.
So again, doing that, they got a much bigger market share of the business, which is great for the consumer. A lot of the other companies have now sort of, I think, reluctantly followed suit, offering similar sort of tariffs to try and either win some of their customers back or stop losing any more customers.
Octopus also really good on customer service. I speak as a personal customer compared to certain others, which shall remain nameless. But they're brilliant on all fronts, I think.
But Octopus are now moving into offering similar sort of rates for business as well.
Okay.
It's typically targeted at small business. The solar system would need to be under 50 kilowatts.
Yeah.
Anything under 50 kilowatts, from when we last checked, you can still get up to 15 pence per kilowatt export, which is fantastic. I mean, if you're on 25p coming in and you can get 15p going out, that excess can really accelerate your return on investment.
Yeah. So in terms of the solar panel market, I mean, there's an awful lot of buildings in the UK that don't have solar panels, so there's an awful lot of scope still for growing that market. Do you think it will ever reach a saturation point where it's more a case of maintaining panels or service a service element of the business, I suppose?
Yeah, I think eventually it'll get to that. The thing is with this technology, it's designed to last a very long time.
Yeah, designed to last years, the panels, aren't they?
Yeah, well, I mean, the ones we do at the moment, the domestic panels we do, you get a 25-year product warranty and a 30-year performance warranty.
Wow.
So they're designed to last a lifetime, pretty much. So it's not the sort of thing where you're going to be renewing that every five years. You can go in and upsell. There's no point. You put your investment in, and that's there for the life of however you're long you're living at that property, typically. So what was your initial question there?
I forgot what I said now, actually. Completely gone away.
I was looking at what else you did.
No, it was whether you think the market will become saturated, it moves into more of a service-based business.
I think it will go there. I mean, we do offer a service, typically not for domestic customers, but we've got a system assurance thing for businesses where we can kind of tailor the support to suit the customer. Don't tend to get too involved with the cleaning side of things. We'll normally recommend using whoever it is used for your window cleaning because they're normally geared up for doing the cleaning. Yeah. But things like if we're doing a commercial system, they've really got to be checked for safety and performance, ideally once a year. So you're going to want an electrician around just to do some voltage tests and things like that. So just to make sure the system's performing at its optimal.
Yeah.
The amount of times where we get sort of calls from third parties saying, we're not sure our system's working very well. And you go in and you're like, crikey, you've got four strings of solar panels here and only one of them's working. But they're not aware of it because nobody's monitoring it.
Yeah.
Wow. So that's one of the things that we do with our system assurance is we have active monitoring on the system. So if something goes down or if there's a fault with the system, we get alerted.
Yeah.
And we can then be proactive with it. Yeah. But saturation point, there, like you mentioned, there's you just take a Google aerial view, 95% of the properties haven't got solar, probably even more than that. So I think it's going to take a long time to reach that sort of saturation point. And I think businesses is kind of where the market is kind of leading towards because they're the ones that are actually getting hit the hardest with the energy costs. I mean, I'm just working on a quote today for one customer. I can't say who they are at the moment, but one of their sites is using 24.5 million kilowatts a year.
Jesus.
So 24 megawatts, which is just absolutely huge.
Yeah.
And you think on that sort of volume, just a change in a couple of pence per kilowatt, that's a lot of money.
Massive amount.
Huge amount of money. So there's companies like that that will just, it's a no-brainer for them to invest in something like that if the capital expenditure's there.
Yeah.
And there's some really good financial products as well where businesses can utilise. We do a really good one which we help actually structure a finance package with a leasing company.
Yeah.
So we've got like a lease purchase system. So the customer can effectively get all the advantages of a operating expense and get to own it at the end. So they kind of get to have the cake and eat it.
Yeah. So in terms of your business, what would you say are the sort of, I guess, the challenges that, if any, that you're facing at the moment? I mean, there's obviously been an uptick in people interested in solar panels, businesses and residential. Is it the sort of the upfront investment sometimes that is a stumbling block for people, and or is it anything else at all that you have to sort of talk them around? Or
so, because we are effectively a reactive, we're not going out there and cold calling.
Yeah.
So we're not having to talk people.
So
normally, if people contact us,
they've
already got an inkling, or they've done at least a little bit of homework and understand some of the benefits. So we're normally in quite a fortunate position in that respect that people are contacting us because they're either forward planning, they're looking to maybe implement something over the next year or two, or for the next year's budget, or they want to do it now. And we've got those financial vehicles if things are a little bit out of their budget, what they were maybe thinking things cost. Yeah. Sometimes people are pleasantly surprised. Some people may have got a quote 3 or 4 years ago, and then they come out and get a quote now, like, crikey, that's 30% cheaper than it was than the last quote I got. And that's just purely because of the market. The costs have come down to a sensible level again to make it a bit more affordable for people.
So, I mean, you obviously, solar panels is the main part of this solar dynamics, but I see you also do the electric vehicle chargers. Is that an area that's growing for you as well, with more people
getting
electric or hybrid cars?
It's not something that we really sort of spend money on marketing. It normally just tends to be a byproducts of what we do. People tend to contact us for the solar, and we'll explain that we do battery storage as well. We do the electric vehicle chargers, and it's normally quite a nice little value add to put onto it. But a lot of domestic homes now, when we're doing a solar system, there's some really cool products, things like the Zappy, which is a My Energy home charging system. They do a commercial one as well, but that can be linked directly in with the solar. So we use that in our offices, where our Zappy is effectively set on a mode called Eco Plus Plus.
Right.
So what that does is it will only put into the vehicle any excess energy from the solar. So that way, you know, whatever's going into that vehicle is all cost zero money.
Yeah.
So it's quite a nice, product.
A nice feel for
it's
a business,
clever,
isn't it?
Mm. It's very clever.
Yeah. Obviously, I wouldn't work at night. But, yeah.
No, but during the day, still, it sounds pretty good anyway.
Mm. But battery storage is very popular. I mean, it's very rare that we wouldn't do battery storage on a domestic install.
Yeah.
Commercial, very, very different. A lot of business, if you're operating, a manufacturing business, and you're operating from 7 in the morning until 4 in the afternoon, there's very little benefit in most occasions is having battery storage. If everything gets shut down before the sun goes down, it's like, what are you storing it for?
Yeah.
There's no need to store it. Let's just build a solar system that will maximise what you use during the day and offset as much of that manufacturing as humanly possible.
I saw on your website that you deal with the public sector as well. What's the kind of, and obviously you can't say who, but what's the kind of the biggest kind of installation the company's had to do in the past for yourselves?
So as a small company, we haven't done any like what I'd call multi-thousand panel systems of yet. The biggest system we did was about 500 panels.
Still big.
Yeah, so it was a nice size system, very nice size system. And it was lucky it was one of those ones that went absolutely smooth. But it was a beautiful roof. You'll probably be able to find it if you go on like Facebook there, you'll probably see a couple of pictures and stuff up there. But yeah, we're currently just sort of, I suppose, building up the size of the systems as we go.
Yeah.
From going from a domestic install company to then going and doing a solar farm wouldn't have been a great jump. But what we've done, we've kind of built the foundations of the business that we're ready to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, if we get a job in for a 2-3 megawatt solar system, we've got the infrastructure there to do it.
Yeah.
If somebody came and said, I've got 1,000 acres that needs doing, that might be a little bit much for us to buy it on, to be honest with you. So we kind of know our limitations.
For now.
And for now, yeah. We need to kind of build up to that, build up to that stage.
Do you think, you mentioned something there, solar farms. Do you think we will see more solar farms in the UK as it grows in popularity?
Possibly.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it is down to whether the grid can actually cope with it. Because they'd have to be placed strategically somewhere near a substation, because this is one of the things that you probably remember between, was it 2013 to 2015, all these solar farms going up everywhere. That was all done under that government incentive scheme, and farmers were kind of looking at it, they were getting these companies approach them saying, look, we'll pay you £4,000 an acre, and you haven't got to maintain the land, and we're just going to put solar on it, and we want a 20-25 year contract for a farmer who was only probably getting £1,000 an acre and having to maintain it.
Sure. Big incentive.
It was a no-brainer for a farmer to let up some of his land. So that was where there was a big massive spike in solar farms. We've quoted on one recently for somebody who bought a fairly small one. It was about a 2,000 panel system, he actually did contact the district network operator. Luckily, where his land was literally right next to the substation, and they've said, yeah, we'll accept that. So the networks, depending on where you are, some networks are just stretched and you wouldn't be able to do it. So I think it's all about each individual area and how whether the network is actually capable of taking X amount more megawatts that could potentially drop onto the grid at any one particular time.
Yeah.
Because we've still got a very antiquated network of electricity
in
this country.
In the UK.
Do you not? No.
We're the most advanced country. No, I'm only joking.
That's bonkers, though, isn't it? When you think about it, that you've got all this new technology, like the solar power, the wind power, all the turbines, you know, like off the coast here and stuff. Mm. Yet the grid is not up to.
It's better than it was. Yeah. They're slowly doing, I think, piecemeal bit by bit. But you've got to think, that's a huge network. I mean, that's...
Yeah, God, I can't even begin to imagine.
Decades and decades of work just to uprate everything. Yeah. It's a huge amount of work. So it is going to take time.
Yeah. I suppose they'll get there eventually. They'll have to if they want to meet their net zero targets. Is 2050 net zero, isn't that it?
Yeah, that's a... Well, it was originally 2030, wasn't it? But I think they realised, hang on a minute. That's,
it's not doable. We're screwed, it's not happening.
Yeah. But the thing is that there's very, very little help. They throw these things. I mean, one thing that helped the domestic market was offering the 0% VAT, which was, that's 20%. I mean, that's quite a big help. They dropped that down to 5% and then dropped it down to zero. Yeah. As of this, not this month, it was, when was it? Crikey, the time's flying. March, from the beginning of March, there is now 0% VAT for churches, non-profit organisations, charities, so businesses that are non-profit or community centres can now actually get that 20% discount by losing the VAT off of it.
I was just saying that 20% is a huge difference for anyone, isn't it? What were you going to say, Sonny?
I was just going to say, we've just been given the nod. We've got 10 minutes to go, which is...
Time flies, doesn't it? Jeez.
Flown by. So a couple of questions for you to kind of push into, really. So what's the one thing your business venture did that you didn't expect?
Right, so I suppose that kind of stems back to my other company. So I've got two points there. So the first one is when we started PBS Group back in November 2007... We kind of left a small little company doing managed print services because we felt that we could do a better job. And then about not even a year later, the credit crunch hit. So we've gone there all guns blazing with like happy as Larry that we're now our own bosses. And then all of a sudden hit with a credit crunch where our pipeline almost dried up overnight. The few customers that we did have that were generating quite nice service revenue went bust. And we were having like all of these machines that we'd put out new being repossessed by banks, and the business that we were getting in, we were putting forward to the leasing companies to get proposals for, and the leasing companies said, no, we're not lending any money at the moment. So we were like, oh crap. So that was one of the biggest learning curves. We weren't expecting that. We were just expecting to go into our new office and just get on sales and service of printers and photocopiers. Yeah. But we kind of got knocked down very, very quickly.
Yeah.
So we kind of had to build from scratch. We really just had to pinpoint focus into, right, we were doing a lot of products at the time. We were doing telephone systems, audio, visual. So we just decided, let's just pinpoint focus in on the managed print. And we started actually contacting some of the banks that were repossessing all this kit to find out, where's all this stuff going? All these beautiful machines that we've put in that have barely been used and they're now not there. Where are they going? So we started contacting repo agents and basically buying back repossessed kit from the leasing companies and then been able to sell them out at much cheaper than our competitors.
Yeah,
that's very clever.
So we kind of became Del Boy and Rodney of the photocopier industry, driving around the country, picking up secondhand stuff and bringing it back and cleaning it up and refurbishing it and putting it back out to customers.
Not on the back of a yellow three-wheeler, I
was just about to say, you've stolen my thunder.
We had a Luton van. I wasn't expecting that. And then on the solar, in all honesty, I wasn't expecting it to grow so quickly.
Yeah.
We kind of built the foundations of expecting, right, that's where we want to be in 3 years, and we hit that within 10 months. So that was a bit of a shock to the system, but luckily we kind of built enough, I suppose, suspension springs in the business to be able to take it. So two sides, the bad side and the good side, I suppose, which both got their positives and negatives.
Yeah, there's nothing like being put at the sharp end to make you knuckle down and do what you need to do to make the business a success.
And I think it taught us a bit of a lesson to make sure that the business is still malleable.
Yeah.
Whereas if there is a cosmic shift for whatever reason, your business isn't fixed yeah. to a point where you can't change it.
Yeah.
So I think we've always kept that sort of bit of malleability within the business yeah. is that if there's a cosmic shift, we've got a backup plan. And I think yeah. that's kind of, it was a good learning curve, although it was really scary at the time because I'd only just had my first child at that time.
Oh, God.
So it yeah. was a really, really scary time financially. So wow. it was, but it, looking back on it, it was a lot of fun. We had a really good, yeah. fun couple of years learning an awful lot.
Yeah. What about in that respect, COVID and your print and management group, like how did that affect it? Because I guess people weren't in their offices. Did that impact it again? Or not
massively.
As bad? Oh, it did massively. Yeah,
yeah. Massively. So the service revenue across our entire industry dropped by about between, depending on what company you were, companies like some of the direct manufacturers were reporting 70-80% reduction in service revenue, which is huge.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely huge. We were quite lucky because we do a lot in the care sector, which we noticed had started actually printing more because now they've got a lot more paperwork to do. So although I think all in all, our service revenue dropped by about 40% for best part of a year and a yeah. half, we kind of decided to just go hell for leather with marketing and just plow it into one sector.
Yeah.
And it kind of worked. We yeah. ended up actually having the best sales year that we ever had, even though our turnover was still down on the yeah. on the previous year. But it kind of, again, kind of kept us on our toes.
Yeah.
But yeah, it honestly, I mean, a lot of that still hasn't recovered. There's still a lot of offices yeah. out there that we had one office that had like 600 people in it.
Yeah.
And quite a lot of printing equipment, spending a lot of money.
Yeah.
That now that office has got maybe 40 people in it. Everyone else works from home.
Yeah. So isn't it?
Yeah.
How the marketplace has changed.
And there's a lot of companies like that. So wow. it did have quite an impact.
Yeah.
But again, I say it's just a matter of being able to sort of swerve and change the business accordingly, I guess.
Yeah, I suppose you have to, don't you? It's nothing like a bit of adversity to sharpen the mind, as it were. And COVID certainly did that for a lot of us.
Mm.
So if someone was going to get started in, like, going back to the solar panels and stuff, if someone was getting started in your career, your industry, what would you tell them?
I suppose it depends whether they were looking to start their own business in that, or whether they were looking to work for the industry. I mean, there's an awful lot to solar, which again we found we were quite lucky that we kind of had the foundations when we took the business over. The basics were there, but there's a huge amount that goes on behind the scenes with the amount of paperwork that has to be done is unreal. All of the health and safety stuff, all of the fitters have to have all these different certifications. We have things like MCS certification, which we have to adhere by. There's an awful lot to do. So if somebody was looking to start a solar business, again, you kind of got to make sure you've got that foundation.
Yeah.
You've really got to kind of make sure you've looked into everything, because we've seen it a lot over the last couple of years where all these companies have started because they saw the boom.
Yeah.
Oh, we can start a solar company. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh, crikey. Yeah. There's a lot more to this than we thought. So bit of due diligence.
Yeah.
And I suppose know where your strengths are.
Yeah.
If you're going to be going into it from a sales perspective, or if you're going into it from a roofing perspective, if you're a roofer and you want to start a solar company, you need to make sure that you've got a decent electrician.
Yeah.
You need to make sure that you've got somebody that's do the due diligence with the paperwork and all the back end dealing with the district network operators and stuff like that. There's so much going on in the background. It's not really the sort of thing one person could take on, because there's so many different facets to it.
I was going to say, it sounds like a lot of moving parts and not something that you or I or the ordinary man on the street would realise, to be honest. You'd assume you just get some solar panels, whack them on a roof, join them up to the electricity, job done.
There's loads of different skill sets that are needed. I mean, lots of different skill sets. You've got to be creative. If you're designing systems, you need to have somebody with an electrician background. You need somebody that can do the roofing side of things. You need somebody that can do the administration, the financing, sales, marketing. there's a lot to it.
I can imagine. Well, we are actually out of time now.
Time has flown.
Yeah, it has flown, Mike.
It has indeed.
So thank you so much for joining us on the podcast, telling us about your business and about solar panels in general. It's been fascinating and really interesting to learn.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Sally. Thank you, Faye. Thank you, Martin.
Hubbub, the Directors Hub podcast, sponsored by the Sussex Business Show.